They've watched Citizen Kane a combined 200 times. Elliot's first words were, "I personally thought the use of Dutch angles was derivative in the 400 blows." In Nathan's favorite historical figure is Fritz Lang. Now they're bringing that snootiness to you with Magellan's at the Movies.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Magellan's at the Movies. I'm your host, Elliot Mogliines. I've got my co-host, Nathan Mogliines, who is, in fact, my brother. Nathan, Glenn Powell has kind of been in the news recently because he was defending Ryan Gosling. Points to him for that. We are also big defenders of Ryan Gosling on this show. But also, apparently, he is playing the lead in an adaptation of Stephen King's The Running Man, directed by Edgar Wright? Yeah. That is a really weird choice for that story, because I have read that book. I don't know how familiar you are with this story, but it's basically one of those like dystopian Hunger Games game show type stories. Very much not what I would call your typical Edgar Wright fare. But, sure. Like, do you know anything about The Running Man? Do you know anything about this movie?
I am casually familiar with the Arnie movie. I believe there's an Arnold Schwarzenegger adaptation of The Running Man with Arnold as the guy who's running, maybe? If that's the main character. I knew it was, like, a dystopia, and it was based around, like, a game show or some sort of violence-centric entertainment system in the future. I agree. It's not what I would sort of presume Edgar Wright would do. Although, saying that, he's done mostly what I would consider genre films since his beginning. I mean, his first Shaun of the Dead is a zombie movie. Hot Fuzz is a cop film. Oh, shoot. Whatever the last one in the Cornetto trilogy, whose name is escaping me briefly, is science fiction. Scott Pilgrim is obviously very, you know, kind of superhero-esque, I would say, in sort of a superhero genre, almost. So, I'm not that surprised that Edgar Wright's doing this. Glenn Powell, I'm glad you brought him up, because I don't know if I've said this in the podcast yet. But I saw recently, I watched Twisters in theater, as well as I saw Hitman a little bit ago. And with the combination of these two movies, I would just have to say that Glenn Powell is one of the most exciting movie stars, up-and-coming movie stars, currently. I think he's a very, very talented actor, and I think he is just so wildly charismatic in, I would say similarly to Ryan Gosling, is just someone who has so much charm and is so much fun to see, even when they're playing someone with maybe less charm or when they're, you know, going a little bit further outside that sort of mold of the classic leading man. They're still just so talented, so fun to watch. And I think Glenn Powell, I'm very excited to see anything he does. I want to say that he's also in Steven Spielberg's next movie, but don't quote me on that. I might be thinking of a different actor who was recently attached to it. So I think it's really exciting that both he's starting to get more success, as well as the directors he's working with is very exciting. I mean, Spielberg, Linklater, Edgar Wright, these are all really talented people, and I don't know, I'm excited to see what he keeps doing.
All right, well, I agree. I really like Glenn Powell. He's definitely in that George Clooney, Ryan Gosling tier of people who are both absurdly attractive and also very charismatic. Like that's their thing, is being charismatic. The other thing that's in the news, movie news at least, this week, is the remake or reboot, not 100% sure, of The Crow, which came out despite the protestations of pretty much everyone who worked on the original movie. I have seen the original movie. I really enjoy it. I was not planning on seeing this movie, and apparently it's terrible, so that has hardly altered my plans. But yeah, what's your take on this, Nathan?
Yeah, I think it looks terrible. I think the trailers looked terrible from all of the things that I've seen. Review wise, the trailer pretty much has every action scene in the movie in it. Because most of the movie is fairly boring and a lot of meaningless sort of character interactions. I haven't seen The Crow. I'm familiar with its legacy and the tragic story behind its creation. I don't think that the tragedy of the film should mean that other people can't remake it, because I believe it's based on like a comic book. And the original film, and again, this is based off of some hearsay. I don't have a super strong grasp of this, but I don't think the original film covered all of the original comic book or covered it incredibly faithfully. So I think the idea of revisiting it, you know, that seems fine to me. But yeah, it seems terrible. Not that surprising. I thought the first trailer looked really, really bad. And every time I see it in theaters, I kind of make fun of it because it looks really overdramatic and silly.
Well, oh well. C'est la vie, as the French say.
All right.
Let's move on, unless you have anything else you'd like to talk about.
No, let's go.
So, this week, we are reviewing Manhunter. This was my choice, so I'll introduce it. If you didn't know, so let's give everyone a quick primer on the Hannibal books. Okay. Hannibal books are written by Thomas Harris, and the first thing he wrote was a book called Red Dragon, which was adapted into the movie Manhunter. This predates Silence of the Lambs, and because of the movie rights of this book, Thomas Harris then wrote Silence of the Lambs, and then because of that movie's success, he continued to write the books. So the books and the movies have always been very closely intertwined in their production. But, so all you need to know is that this is the first book in the Hannibal series, the series of books about Hannibal Lecter, or that feature Hannibal Lecter. It came out before Silence of the Lambs, as did this movie. This movie follows not Clarice Starling, but an FBI agent named Will Graham, as he is hunting a serial killer called the Tooth Fairy. And as happens in these movies, he goes to Hannibal Lecter to get some help, to get the inside track. So I chose this movie because I wanted to watch it. This is the first time I've watched it. As we know from the Silence of the Lambs episode that we did, I love Silence of the Lambs. I love Hannibal Lecter. I have read all of these books, and I just want to just go back to where it all started and see, of course, the question that's probably on everyone's minds, people who haven't seen this movie, is what is Hannibal Lecter like in this movie? Who is he even played by? And we'll get to all of that very shortly. So stay tuned. Don't touch that dial. In terms of my first impression, and then we'll kick it over to Nathan, I really liked this movie. I thought it was excellent. I don't think it's super comparable to Silence of the Lambs. This movie is much more understated, much more, I don't know if artistic is necessarily the right word, but much more experimental in its visuals, in its pacing, in its characters. It's got some very dreamlike, surreal sequences. There's a lot of playing around with colors in the movie, especially in the night scenes, which are like, it just looks like everyone's been painted blue. But the point of all this is that I don't think I can say if this is better or Silence of the Lambs or not, because they're just very different movies with very different objectives. I would probably say I like Silence of the Lambs more. That's just because I really like that movie. But this movie is really good in its own right. Like I said, it's much more understated, a little bit slower paced, much more of a procedural. Like, there are extended sequences of people just going through evidence collection, trying different methods on different pieces of evidence to extract as much information as they can out of. And I say it like every month, I'm a sucker for mechanics in movies. So this kind of diving into the nitty gritty of police work, the mechanics of police work, I was really here for. Yeah, I thought the soundtrack was very much of its time. A little bit distracting. There are some pacing issues in the third act and some decisions about the introduction of the serial killer as a character that I don't think are necessarily the way I would have gone. But yeah, as a whole, I was really into this. Nathan, what'd you think?
Yeah, so I guess to give some of maybe the movie history behind this film, as opposed to the literary history behind this movie, is this is a Michael Mann movie. If you know or have heard of Michael Mann, you've probably heard of his, what's widely considered his magnum opus, Heat, which is a very lengthy crime drama. Elliot and I have seen it. We're not tremendous fans, but it's an iconic film. It's considered to be a part of the filmic canon, I would say. And Michael Mann is kind of famous for procedurals. He's famous for very style-heavy procedurals, specifically. Heat is very much like that. Miami Vice is very style over sort of substance. And I would say this movie is very much in that same category, as well as, Elliot, you already mentioned the soundtrack. One of the first things I noticed is I was like, oh yeah, this is an aggressively 80s movie. The soundtrack is synths heavy. The story in general, I would say, is very much of the 80s in both its kind of psychological leanings of it, as well as its... The 80s were not a great time for people trying to have a lot of violence or nudity in their movies, because studio heads were kind of trying to scale all those things back to get families to go back to the theaters after the 70s kind of had a lot of nudity and violence and maybe, you know, kept kids out of them so much, which I feel like is kind of noticeable in this movie. There's more than a few scenes where they're kind of skirting around showing something more graphic, such as the serial killers actually killing someone or something like that. So that's some of just the film history or the context in which this movie was made. I would say I also like this movie, I think, more than I expected to. I really liked the style of this movie. I thought the vibe of the film was perfectly matching what I kind of felt was the heart of the movie, which was this kind of psychological evaluation of both the serial killers, but more specifically Will Graham himself, and what it cost him to try and get inside the heads of these people in order to catch them. I thought it was great, and yeah, everyone looks blue all the time because everyone lives in a house by the sea where the water is reflecting. There's a great shot near the end where Graham is sitting inside like a cafe or something while it's raining, and the lighting is all very dramatic. It's great. It's classic noir sort of things. And yeah, I think further, I would agree with you on some of the issues in terms of pacing and in terms of the villain, but Yeah, I thought this was a pretty good movie. I feel like it does probably just get a little under-discussed because of Silence of the Lambs. And from my understanding, the Hannibal Lecter books become more and more about Hannibal as they go on. Because he's barely in this movie. He's in 2-3 scenes.
And yeah, something like that.
It's not at all comparable to Silence of the Lambs, where he kind of takes over the movie over the course of it.
Yeah, the books get very bad, I would say, as they go along.
Oh, man.
So, actually, let's start there, because that's probably going to be the biggest point of reference for people who don't know this movie, is that it's a Hannibal Lecter story, or that Hannibal Lecter is in it. So let's talk about Hannibal Lecter, and we don't need to talk about Anthony Hopkins. We can talk about Brian Cox, who is this movie's Hannibal Lecter, and sort of evaluate him on his own merits. Like you said, he's not in the movie for a whole lot, but I think that Brian Cox does make a lot of the time that he's given. His Hannibal Lecter is, again, less theatrical than what we see in Silence of the Lambs. The word that I keep on coming back to is understated. He seems much more frustrated, much more, I don't know, overtly malicious than people who know Hannibal Lecter from Silence of the Lambs and Hannibal and the other movies would probably be familiar with. And I think that that's very much in keeping with this movie's more, I don't know, I hesitate to say grounded, but more gritty style. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think he's good. I like Brian Cox's performance. I like seeing the character in this more humanized lens, more subject to human foibles like frustration, like malice. He facilitates, I'm not sure if it's supposed to be a joke, but one of the parts of the movie that I laugh the most at, when he's on the phone with Will Graham, I think it's the last time Hannibal Lecter's in the movie. He's on the phone with Will Graham, and this is actually something from the book that Hannibal Lecter is constantly banging on about churches collapsing on worshipers. And so he's going through this huge list, and Will Graham just kind of looks a little bored and then puts the phone down. And I don't know if that was supposed to be a joke, but it really made me laugh. But anyway, I think he's really good. He's more of a facilitator of the movie's plot. Or he does facilitate a lot of the movie's plot in Silence of the Lambs, so strike that from the record. I think that he's good, and I like what he contributes to Will Graham's character arc, which is mostly focused on his uncanny ability to get into the minds of serial killers, which is the origin of the somewhat hokey line, "You want to pick up the scent again? Smell yourself." I know. And Hannibal Lecter is kind of the mouthpiece for that arc, because he's always asking Will, like, "Oh, why do you think you found me? What's it like to be in the mind of the Tooth Fairy?" It's just, like I said, it's a serial killer's name. So I thought it was good, and I really liked Brian Cox's performance.
Yeah, I agree with a lot of the things you said. I think it's much more understated. It's way more human. I think that's the thing about this movie in comparison to Silence of the Lambs, which, you know, maybe we should stop comparing it. But I do think it was one of the things that jumped out at me, was that his Hannibal was very much, seemed more like just some dude who kind of had a chip on his shoulder about some things. And, you know, he was not someone who was going to make a weird noise after saying he ate someone's liver. That would be very surprising to me. And yeah, I actually really liked the scene where Will first met Hannibal. That I thought the shot reverse shot where both of them are seen through the bars of the prison, it's not like a revelatory thing, but it is a neat visual way of trying to diminish the contrast and further this character arc of what is it going to cost Will psychologically to try and catch this person if his method of catching them is to think like that. And, you know, so shooting him through the prison bars in the same way they were shooting Hannibal sends that sort of message that, you know, we're losing it. And then is sent even better by that fantastic line you already mentioned. You want the scent, smell yourself. I also did really like how, and again, this was something that would not happen, like how noticeably flustered Will was at the end of the interview, that he's like banging on the door. He's noticeably wanting to get out from, away from Hannibal. Also, why on earth is his name spelled Lecter with a K in this movie? Is it
I have no idea.
That in the book, or?
I don't think so. I think his name is spelled the way it's spelled in every other movie.
Interesting. But no, I thought he was pretty good. I think maybe the next thing to talk about is the character of Will Graham as played by... Oh, give me a second. William Peterson. Not an actor I'm familiar with, but I thought he did a really good job. Again, I think a lot of this movie is made on Will's character arc and just the vibes of his character arc of that come from the stylistic choices in terms of the visuals and the music. That I love watching, you know, cops wander around a crime scene muttering to themselves, and then, you know, why'd you do this? Oh, it's because he's crazy, and, you know, I love that kind of stuff. So I really like both the character of Will Graham, and I thought the performance was pretty good too.
Yeah, he reminded me a lot, especially in the first interview scene with Hannibal Lecter, reminded me a lot of the Batman in the Batman, especially if you've seen that deleted scene that they released online of the interview between Batman and not Joker, but Joker. He reminded me a lot. That scene had a lot of... The Batman interview scene had a lot of this Hannibal Lecter interview scene vibes of Will, of the serial killer being not cooperative, and the interviewer getting continuously more frustrated as the killer refuses to cooperate and like kind of psychoanalyzes them. So yeah, and I also like those scenes of Will. It's again emphasizing his ability to think like a serial killer, him maybe watching a video or being in the crime scene and just saying to himself, you saw this and you felt this way and this is what you did later, and this is how he kind of makes his deductions, is this is how he's feeling and thinking, so this is what he would do. It's really good. I really like the performance by William Peterson, and I think that he really sells the uncertainty of this character, of inhabiting this mind space for so long. Like, what would that actually do to a person? I think we get a really good look at that because of William Peterson's performance. He just seems kind of bummed out a lot. This is not a fun headspace to occupy. And this, of course, attends the many doubts of his character of, am I any different from these people? Is this ruining my life? Because it's messing with his wife, with his son. And of course, it's putting him in the crosshairs. Also, I just want to say, this has nothing to do with anything, but Hannibal Lecter is always asking about as always asking Will, how did you find me? How did you find me? The idea being that he found, because we should mention, which we already kind of implied but not said, Will Graham is the person who caught Hannibal Lecter. Mm-hmm. And Hannibal Lecter's always asking, why did you find me? With the implication being that it's because he thought like him. That's not true. Like, in the book and in this movie, he found him because of total luck. Because he mentions he was in his office and saw a book that was about war wounds or something, and then he just makes this connection, and I'm like, that has nothing to do with being in his headspace. You just saw something he had and drew a connection. That's something that, like, any normal policeman could do. So, that was weird. But Will Graham, great character. Really like his performance. Really like the vulnerability and the, I don't know what you'd call it, his self-doubt that he eventually, like all good character arcs, he overcomes, has himself a happy ending. Love to see it.
Yeah, a classic 80s freeze frame ending, in fact. Yes.
Let's bring back the freeze frame ending.
Let's not bring back the freeze frame. I hate freeze frames.
At the end of the Batman Part 2, Batman should jump into the air and fist pump, and then boom, freeze frame. That would be great.
I do also want to say that I think the character of Will Graham is interesting enough that even in the scenes where he is with his family, the movie doesn't feel like it's dragging and doesn't feel like it's having just like scenes for no reason, which I think can kind of be a risky run if you're doing a procedural, is it's like, oh, we got to show his family, so like, we have a female character, so you care a little bit more about the character. But I thought the scenes with his family were some of the best scenes in the movie. I think the scene where he's getting groceries with his son, and he's trying to explain to him, you know, kind of why he's doing what he's doing and why there's some risk in it. Some of the things that he experienced after catching Hannibal Lecter. I thought that was one of the best scenes in the movie. I thought it was very compelling. And again, I find the character very interesting. So I really enjoyed these extra scenes where we got to see a different flavor of him besides just, yeah, brooding in a dark house, climbing a tree, or running around trying to find evidence.
I agree. And speaking of evidence, I'd like to now talk about another one of my favorite things about this movie, and that's the procedural elements. Because there are a few scenes where it's just Will in the crime scene, taking notes, trying to figure out what happened. And then there are other scenes that are more urgent. Specifically, there's a scene where they find out that Hannibal Lecter has been communicating with the Tooth Fairy, and that he's got parts of a letter from the Tooth Fairy written on a piece of toilet paper. So they don't want to tip off Hannibal Lecter. They know that they now have this line of communication that they can exploit. So they've got like 4 hours to try to figure out how Hannibal Lecter was going to respond. And I really liked the sequence because it's basically just running through the different ways that you can get evidence off of it, that they're looking at handwriting analysis and spectrograms and stuff like that. And all the while, you have this ticking time, this ticking clock that's adding suspense to the movie. And it culminates with this, I don't know, sort of moral dilemma. Of they find out that Hannibal Lecter is going to respond via a newspaper ad, and they don't know, it's obviously encoded, and they don't know what the code is, so they're like, what do we do? If we take it out, Hannibal Lecter will know that we've figured this out. If we leave it in, it could end up with the Tooth Fairy killing someone. And so there's this great scene of them just kind of laying out what they're going to do and whether or not they should let this thing run and try to break the code or substitute their own letter and possibly tip off Hannibal and thereby tip off the Tooth Fairy. So I really like this scene. I love the mechanics of it. I love them explaining how they eventually figure out where Hannibal Lecter is going to put his reply. I just really like scenes of characters sitting down and talking things through. Maybe it's because of my background in like history and literature and philosophy and stuff like that. I just really am into these kinds of scenes. But yeah, I thought it was really effective. I thought that the tension was there. I love the mechanics of it. And this applies to the whole movie. And I really like it when characters in movies make smart decisions or make the best decisions that they probably can, and it doesn't work out, not because they're stupid or because the villain just like happens to know something, but because it just doesn't work out because they do their best and the villain like outsmarts them, or something that they didn't foresee ends up interfering with their plan. Because that really contributes to a sense of equality between protagonist and antagonist, that you know that this guy, the protagonists are really smart and they're doing their best, but the antagonist, he's a good foil for them. Like he's got it going on. He knows how to outmaneuver them, which then, I'm getting into the mechanics of writing here, then makes it satisfying when they do figure out the killer's identity and take him down. Great stuff, everyone. So, what'd you think about the, I know that you are also partial to procedurals, or I think I know that, maybe I'm just making that up, but what did you think about these kinds of elements in the movie?
I thought they were really good as well. I think they add a lot of realism to the movie, even if this is, I have no idea if this has any basis in reality, if this is really the way the FBI goes about doing investigations, if they bring in just one dude to wander around putting himself in the mind of the killer. That seems kind of unlikely to be. But in the world of the movie, it feels very realistic, and the way everything is very clearly explained, but not so clearly explained that you feel like the movie's talking down to you. Like, I liked how a lot of the decisions the characters made and a lot of the conclusions they came to, they didn't fully explain it. And so you had to be locked in with the movie, paying attention in order to come to the same conclusion they do. Stuff like the final discovery that Will makes, where he realizes, oh, the guy has access to their home videos just like we do. And so he's probably someone who works at a store that develops film. The way he gets to that is not super clear. He doesn't explain it super explicitly. So you do kind of have to be paying very close attention. And I really like that. I like it when movies assume that you're going to treat them with kind of the, not to be super pretentious, but the amount of attention and respect that they maybe deserve, right? That if you're going to watch a movie, you're going to, at least for like the first time you watch a movie, you're going to pay attention. You're going to be thinking about the movie as you're watching the movie, and you're going to be trying to figure out, especially with a movie like this where there's mystery and stuff, that you're going to be trying to figure out those same things. So I really like those elements. And I definitely agree, too, with your statement that I think this movie does a really good job of, it never seems like the serial killer is like a genius who's able to outsmart them, and it never seems like they're geniuses who can outsmart him. Like, they, following the discovery of the note to Lecter, they do set a trap for him. And the reason he doesn't fall for the trap isn't because he's like a genius and he sees it coming. He just goes a different direction. He goes a direction they didn't expect. He goes for a different person than who they thought he would target. Which I think is really good, because it's not like they're stupid that they made some idiotic mistake. And it's not like he's, you know, I love The Dark Knight, but some of the things the Joker does, it's like, wow, how on earth could he have possibly predicted that that would be what Batman or what the police would do? And especially with who the serial killer is, that he is just kind of like some dude. He's just, you know, some guy who works at a photo thing who's kind of disturbed. I think it's really good. So, yeah, these are more positives for the movie for me.
All right. Well, then let's balance it out a little and talk a little bit about the negatives. And most of those negatives, for me at least, are tied up in the serial killer. His name is Francis Dollarhide. He refers to himself as the Red Dragon because he's in the book. It's not really explained super well in the movie. But in the book, he's really obsessed with the painting by William Blake of the Great Red Dragon referred to in Revelations. It's actually a really cool painting. I like it a lot. And I really like William Blake as a poet. He wrote some really good poetry. But that doesn't matter. No one cares. So for most of this movie, the Tooth Fairy / the Red Dragon is not on screen. And I actually thought, because we were getting so deep into the movie, I thought, because he is in the book, there are pretty frequent cuts over to him. And I thought, like, oh, they're just not going to have him be in the movie until they catch him, which I was actually kind of pleased with, because in most detective procedurals, you do have some kind of familiarity with the serial killer, because most detective procedurals are not whodunits, where the point of the movie is a surprise, learning about the killer's identity, which is a surprise, because you almost certainly will know. You will have seen the killer before, you just didn't know he was the killer. So, like in Scream or Knives Out, the point of the movie is like, I didn't see that coming. I can't believe he's the killer. It's not so procedurals, because they're not really about the mystery of the killer's identity. They're about the process, the procedure of catching him. And I thought it would be really interesting to have one of those where the serial killer is as unknown to us as he is to the protagonist. And that ends up not being the case, which isn't necessarily a problem. Like, I still like Sasevenvan and the Batman, where the serial killer is more known to us. Not so much as Sasevenvan, because he kind of only shows up at the end. I think that the problem is that the movie then kind of tries to do a lot of character work on him in very little time, because he's only really introduced in third act. And then we spend some pretty considerable screen time with him going through his daily life, trying to woo this woman that he works with and choosing his next victim. And I don't think it really works, because it comes in so late and it kind of messes up the pacing of the movie, where we now have long sequences with the serial killer that don't really contribute much to the whole movie, which is about catching him. Like, the movie's not really about the serial killer or his pathology or his character or anything like that. It really is about Will Graham and his efforts to catch him. So these sequences about the serial killer's character and his methods, I thought, it's not that they were bad necessarily, because I really liked Tom Noonan, who played the serial killer, Francis Dollarhide. And there is some interest to be had in just watching this person who we know is such a monster go about his daily life pretending to be a normal person. But I think on the whole, it just kind of messes with the pacing of the movie and comes in too late to really get me invested in Francis Dollarhide as a character and as a serial killer.
I absolutely agree. I think it's too little too late. I don't think the serial killer is as interesting as Will Graham as a character. I think the only interesting aspects of these scenes with the killer is in seeing the ways that Will Graham is correctly coming to conclusions about the psyche of the character. That Graham is saying, oh, he feels, you know, unwanted, undesired by people, and so he's killing people in an effort to create something where he is desired and wanted. And so in seeing some of the scenes where he's trying to woo this woman at work, where he's trying to interact with her, we can see some of that, the evidence of that analysis of his psyche, which is a little interesting, but it's not made, it's not done in a way that's super clear that if that's the intention, that we're supposed to be seeing, like, oh, Will is coming to the correct conclusions. You would expect that to be edited in a different way if that was the intention. So instead, it feels like it's just tacked on scenes where we get to know this serial killer a little bit. And again, he's not that interesting. He's not, like, he's not as interesting of a character as Will Graham, and he's not particularly compelling. He's just kind of crazy. He's not like Hannibal Lecter, where he's posing something interesting to Will. So yeah, I felt like all of the scenes with him just felt really pointless. And they did some to set up the finale where he's captured the girl that he's trying to woo and he's just going to kill her. So it did some to set up that sort of thing. But I really don't think you would need all of these scenes to... I honestly think you would only need that final scene right before the climax, where he sees another coworker drop her off and kind of like touches her face in a way that he assumes is romantic, but is actually just she's got something in her hair. I feel like all you need is that scene, and most people watching it would be able to assume a lot of the things from the previous scenes and be on board with what's about to happen. On board in the sense of like understand and they're following it well, not on board like they're supporting it. So yeah, it just, it hurts the pacing. It takes away from Will, who again is the most compelling and, in my opinion, the heart of the movie, for me at least. So yeah. As well as he's just not a very, you know, he's just a serial killer. He's not, he doesn't even get to do anything at the end. Also, the shootout, yikes. The final shootout at the end is full of terrible 80s stylistic choices that I don't think have aged well. I mean, they show the same guy getting shot like twice. Every time someone gets shot, they like show it and then show it from a different angle, which is goofy. There's a lot of slow-mo, which is goofy. It's just kind of a goofy final shootout, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. He's also using a shotgun, and if memory serves, he's one-handing it, which is not recommended to when you're firing a shotgun.
With no kickback. I mean, this man is the strongest person on earth.
It's like a blaster.
He one-hand shoots a shotgun with no visible movement in his arm.
Well, he is big. He's like 6'7" or something, I think they say. But yeah, I actually really like the scene where he ends up kidnapping Reba, is the name of the woman he's sort of dating. Only because it's got a nice stylistic flourish where we kind of see through his eyes and see there's the shot of the man touching Reba's face is much more suggestive, and it's like kind of lit with some very again suggestive lighting, and then we cut to what's actually happening where he's just like wiping something off her face or something like that. So I like that. I think that's a nice touch. But yes, I agree that Francis Dolarhyde is an area where the movie kind of suffers because of its more gritty humanistic or human approach, because he is so just kind of normal. He's just kind of a guy. who's upset about his cleft palate. But yeah, I don't have a whole lot else to talk about. I think this movie looks really good. I'm a big fan of the lighting and the colors and the cinematography. There's some lovely wide shots, long shots of just people doing things that are really well composed. The soundtrack is a little distracting, but it's not terrible. Like, it's not something I would listen to casually, but it's not bad. And everyone, in addition to Brian Cox and William Peterson, everyone is turning in a really good performance. I really liked Jack Crawford in this movie. The guy who plays Freddie Lowndes, who's this like sniveling, weaselly little reporter, that's Stephen Lang, who plays Papa Dragon, or whatever his name is, in Avatar. That is so wild.
Yeah, that's a way different role.
I know. This is Papa Dragon. That's such a stupid movie. Gosh, I really hate Avatar.
Dude, you're excited for Avatar Fire and Ash?
Oh man, that's going to be the one where James Cameron turns it around.
Dude, it's going to be, I swear, if this one also has them just like visiting another fucking Avatar tribe and then like acclimating to them, I'm going to lose it. We can't keep letting him get away with this.
That would actually be really fun. I know we're getting off track here, but that would actually be really funny if he made like six movies with the exact same plot structure, where it's like Avatar, I don't know, the gardeners, and it goes to the gardening clan, acclimates, and then has to leave, and then just again and again and again. I would find that hilarious.
Yeah. That's crazy. That it took him like a decade to write these, and this is what he cooked up. A script that says "cuh" 100 gajillion times.
Cuz,
whatever it was the stupid kids were saying.
Cuz, anyway. Bro.
Yeah, I agree with all the things you said. I think the visual, I've already said multiple times, I think the vibes in this movie are immaculate. I like the score quite a bit. The synths, I'm a sucker for synths. The soundtrack, in terms of like the normal songs that they play, are weird. I don't know any of them. I think they start playing a Phil Collins song at the end, right before they do the freeze frame on the beach, which feels so corny. It's just ridiculous. But yeah, I'm ready to get to ratings if you're ready, Elliot.
Let's do it to it.
All right, well. Yeah, I like this movie more than I expected. I'm kind of I'm not a Michael Mann fanboy. I wouldn't say that. I have not really loved any of his movies that I've seen, but I thought this was pretty good. I really like the vibes. I think the main character and his character arc is fantastic. And I think this is just a really interesting movie to watch, especially in the context of Silence of the Lambs and just where the Hannibal series would go, focusing much more on, you know, Hannibal than all of this procedural stuff. I think it's really interesting, as well as it's an interesting just piece of 80s film cliches and film habits. So I really liked it. Some of the negatives that I already said, you know, there's pacing, the serial killer is not that great, but that doesn't take it down a huge amount. I'm going to give it a 7.7.
Wow. All right, then. Clearly, I like this movie, or I was more into it, because, yeah, I really like this movie. Great characters, great performances, great cinematography. There are some issues with pacing in the third act, and I'm not 100% sold on Francis Dolarhyde as an antagonist. Some weird stuff with the soundtrack, but ultimately not too much that subtracts from what is a really great experience that I think if you like the Batman and you want something similar, but something that's maybe a little bit more, I don't know, something that requires a little bit more engagement, I would say that this movie is probably going to do it for you. It definitely does it for me. So I'm going to give it an A-. And I guess you can compare that score to Silence of the Lambs and actually determine which one I think is better, because I can't
remember. I think you gave that an A, I would imagine.
Well, I did say I liked Silence of the Lambs more, but it doesn't matter. Let's talk about other movies that we like, that we think people who watch this movie would enjoy. I'll go first, because I mentioned this to Nathan earlier. Nathan has actually already recommended this. I mean, what can I say? We've only watched like 26 movies between us, so we have a limited pool to draw from. But my recommendation is going to be Zodiac. We were actually talking about this a little bit before the episode, that David Fincher is allegedly ripping this movie off. That's wrong. That's wrong. David Fincher's great. But Zodiac is very similar to Manhunter. It's about it's based on the real story of the Zodiac killer killings. Didn't they like recently discover who that guy was? Somebody, they discovered like some kind of journal or something from someone that proved that he was the guy. I don't know. It doesn't matter. I'm only bringing it up because I would be curious to see if it is who the movie eventually ends up pointing the finger at, which was somewhat notable in the movie that it did actually make an accusation or it made a very implicit accusation. But anyway, this is your classic Fincher movie in terms of the style, which I love. I love Fincher's method of directing and lighting and stuff. It's similar to Manhunter in that it's got this very obsessive main character who's on the brink of being destroyed by his quest for finding the killer. It doesn't end quite as happily for this character as it does in Manhunter. But it's got the procedural elements of running through the Zodiac Killer's codes and the crime scenes, all that kind of stuff. It's just a great movie. I think it would make a really nice double feature, honestly, with Manhunter. So if you want to do that, you've got like, I don't know, 4 extra hours to spare. Go ahead and give it a try.
Yeah, I agree. I like Zodiac quite a bit. It's a good movie. My recommendation, I'm staying in the 80s for this one. This is a movie I watched kind of recently. It's less of a crime procedural and more of a conspiracy procedural. It's Brian De Palma's Blowout, featuring John Travolta. John Travolta's playing a sound engineer for some Z-list movies, and one night, as he's recording sounds for their next movie, he records the sound of a politician getting assassinated. And so then he gets drawn into a web of trying to, this is where it becomes a bit more of a procedural, that he's trying to piece together the evidence he needs to convince other people that what he saw was what he thought he saw. I think it's really fantastic. I think John Travolta is really good in this movie. As someone who knows John Travolta mostly from like goofy stuff, like Face Off, it's kind of fun to go back and watch the old movies that he got famous for and see that he was actually a really talented and promising actor at one point. I think the conspiracy elements of this movie are fantastic. The tone and style of the movie is really great. It's very kind, it's not meta, but it's kind of aware of movie tropes, which is always fun to see. And yeah, it's just a fun, great movie to watch. I don't know about fun. Your definition of fun might depend, but I think the movie is a lot of fun to watch Brian De Palma do some of his stylistic stuff on some of these sequences. So I think if you like this for some of the style, I think Blowout is in a similar sort of vein.
Wow, very interesting. I've never even heard of that movie, so I can't comment on it. But yeah, Brian De Palma, interesting director. Really like split diopter shots. That movie sounds a lot like The Conversation. But
it's, yeah, it is kind of like a conversation, The Conversation.
Well, anyway. Life is hard and full of disappointments. We all know it. It's just someone needs to say it. I know that I did not get the Coen Brothers ranking up on the blog when I said I would last week, but I am staking my claim here. It is going to be out this week. I'm going to say it. It is out right now as you're listening to this episode.
Oh my goodness.
If you close Spotify or Apple Play or whatever the fart and go to the blog, there it'll be. It'll be right there. That's how confident I am. So please go and read that and see if you agree with me. You probably won't.
Yeah, if you don't, leave a comment on the blog or send us an email. Let us know if you don't agree with Elliot's Coen Brothers movie ranking. Otherwise, we're going to be back next week. You know we'll be back with another movie review. We'll be discussing some film. We'll be talking about the news of the week. There'll be banter. There will be amazing recommendations. Be sure to tune in. Have a great week in the interim. And thanks for listening.